I'd like to welcome you all to 300th episode of G'day World.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
We have a legacy of freedom and privilege, which has been won by hard struggle, hasn't been given by from above. It's been won, but we have it, and we can use that to help people who are suffering seriously if we try.
Well, the singularity is a future time which will be profoundly transformative, where the machine intelligence we're creating will be billions of times more powerful than our own biological intelligence.
Well, I ask you, what's next for Robert Scoble? What do you think you're going to be doing 3-4 years from now?
Oh, geez. Well, hopefully we'll have a successful launch of Longhorn. I want to stick around with Microsoft for at least 4 more years.
Around what I call the because effect rather than the with effect. In other words, I can make more money because of my blog than with
anything
my blog.
Anything of this magnitude only happens because enormous numbers of people want it to happen and are willing to commit time and energy and money.
G'day World, episode 300. You're listening to Cameron Riley on the Podcast Network. Thanks for joining me. It's not actually technically the third anniversary of G'day World, which is a couple of weeks away. I think the first episode was around about November 24th or 25th, 2004. But it is episode 300. Now, there's probably another 40 or 50 episodes in there that weren't part of the numbering scheme, so I've actually think I've done 350, but what the hell? What's 50 episodes between friends? So, this is actually going to be a good marking point for G'day World, and I've got an interview that I'm going to splice in here tonight, one that I did at Modem 7 last night with a young Melbourne entrepreneur, James Massini. But before I throw to that, I just want to talk a little bit about some of the rethinking I've been doing recently about G'day World and the podcast network and online communities, and share that with you. So as long-term listeners will know, when we started G'day World back in 2004, it was mostly technology news, but very early on, I also was talking about other things that are of interest to me, you know, movies, music, politics, religion, philosophy, etc. But it was mostly about technology. And then I took it down. It sort of became my own personal platform after a while to really just talk about religion and politics and the singularity, advanced artificial intelligence, stuff like that, the climate, environment, etc., things that were on my mind. But over the weekend, on my way back from the PodCamp Perth trip, I was thinking a lot around this idea of geek communities that we're developing and what we're doing with them. It's something that's been bugging me for quite some time now. And a few things, I guess, consolidated for me on the trip to Perth. And this is the realization that all of these communities that we're building around our blogs or our podcasts or on Twitter and Second Life and Facebook, that we need to find a way to actually direct them to do something for good. When I say we need to, I mean I need to. That's what I feel like that is something that would be a worthwhile use of my time. Now, when I say do something for good, I don't really know what that means. Do we make the world a better place? And if so, what does that mean and how do we do it and in what areas? So for the next 12 months, G'day World is going to be focused on trying to answer this question. What can we do on a daily basis to make the world a better place? And I really have no idea where it's going to lead, but I just think it would be a worthwhile use of my time and energy over the course of the next year trying to understand the essence of that question and reaching out to people, exploring different ways that people are already doing it today and exploring how we as a community, and by we I mean not only those of you who listen to this show, but sort of the early adopter, the technology early adopter community. You know, most people listening to podcasts today, I think it's still fair to say, technology early adopters, they might define themselves as geeks. They tend to be living in Western countries. They are white, middle class, well off, have access to a lot of great toys and a lot of great technology. And I feel like this is a great opportunity. We should be doing something with all of these gifts that we've been given. And they are gifts. Well, they are gifts from previous generations. I mean, the freedom and democracy that we enjoy in the West wasn't granted to us by some sort of benign intelligence. It was hard won and fought for by people over thousands and thousands of years. But we have it. And it's the same with the technology. You know, there's a lot of people that went before us that bought, that built the technology infrastructure that I think we take for granted today. But it's a massive gift, and I feel an increasing sense of responsibility that we should be using the gifts of democracy and freedom and the reach that the technology gives us and the access to information that it gives us to really try and improve the chances of survival for the human race. So that's what I'm going to be doing mostly on G'day World this year. You know, Scott Sherman and I started a show called The Better World Show a few months ago and really only got a couple of episodes into it. And then, as often happens with podcasts, we got distracted by other things. And because he and I both run fairly big podcasts already on TPN, I felt it was, and they needed our attention, I felt it was reasonable for us to go and give those shows our full attention for a little while. And I don't necessarily think that G'day World and The Better World Show will necessarily compete, but G'day World is just going to have this as a primary focus. Doesn't mean I won't do shows on other things. I will still do the occasional show on something else. In fact, one of the first shows I'm going to do is going to be on my experience of migrating from Windows to the Mac recently. As readers of the blog will know, I recently got a 17-inch widescreen MacBook Pro, my first Mac, and it was sponsored by a company called GlobalOneTraining.com. out of Canada, and I'd like to, they're going to be running some advertising, but I'd like to just tell you a little bit about these guys, obviously, because they've paid for my new laptop. And they are also actually sponsoring an episode on G'day World that I did a few months ago with Dr. John DeMartini, who is a motivational speaker and author from the United States. Now, Global One Training, which is a global with the number one, training.com, actually run all of his seminars around the world. And so they're going to be doing some advertising on G'day World. And rather than give me cash, I said, give me a laptop. And but if you haven't heard that interview with John that I did, you should check it out. It was a pretty good episode. You know, I'm a little bit kind of touch and go with these motivational speaker types. And John had been on The Secret, which was a film I wasn't too keen on. But when I started reading his website, some of the material on it, I actually thought that I agreed with a lot of the stuff he was saying. And when I had him on the show, I actually really enjoyed the chat. And we're working on getting him back to come on again as a guest. And maybe the next time he comes to Australia, getting some FaceTime with him. But anyway, so if you haven't heard that show, go and listen to it. And big shout out to GlobalOneTraining.com if you're interested in going to any of John DeMartini's seminars. You can find them on, I think it's johndemartini.com, D-E, Martini, or globalonetraining.com. You'll find them there as well. Now, the interview with James Massini that I'm putting up was recorded at Modem 7 last night, and it was my first time recording a podcast on the Mac, and I had my new Blue Snowball mic plugged into it. And the audio quality is not great when I listen this morning. There's a lot of background noise. And I actually had planned for James and I to be sitting a lot closer to the mic. And then we sort of, for a variety of reasons, stood up and we're a meter and a half away from the microphone. You can still hear what's being said. It's just a lot of background noise. And I apologize for that. But I think it's worthwhile putting it up because it's a great chat. James is a very smart young bloke, 24. Started hippo.com.au, I think it is. It's an online job board recruitment site for 15 to 24-year-olds. And not only is it a really targeted at a really interesting niche, but James is a really interesting fellow, and I've really enjoyed getting to know him over the last couple of months, and have been looking forward to having a chance to get him on the show. So sort of tied it in with him being our guest speaker at last night. By the way, for those of you in Melbourne who weren't at Modem last night, it was also the G'day World birthday party, so don't ask me when I'm throwing the G'day World birthday party, because I threw it at Modem last night. And there was free drinks for everybody, and a good time was had for all. And if you weren't there, then you just missed out. Tough shit. And I just want to talk about Modem as well, briefly, before I throw to the interview with James. You know, Modem, which I started 7 months ago with the help of some of the hardcore G'day World Melbourne listeners, Michael Specht, Miriam Parkinson, Kate Kelly, Caitlin Kelly, and I think who else was involved in the early ones? Maybe Tony Goodson was there. I can't remember who. David Jackson, my next door neighbor. There's a few other people we met sort of at Ubaya. I think Ubaya was there. We met at a little bar in Yarraville 6 or 7 months ago, and I said, well, we need an event where people who are interested in digital media, blogging, podcasting, Twitter, Second Life, whatever, can get together and sort of chat once a month in Melbourne. And I'd say it's been a fairly great success. I mean, we typically get 50 to 100 people there. Last night, we only had about 30, but I think that was a combination of the rain and also that I changed the conditions. I said you had to give us some money, which we could go and donate to a worthy cause. But, you know, I've never really cared about the size of it. It's just getting the right people. It's the same as the audience for this show. You know, I changed direction so much on the audience with this show that the audience is nowhere near as big as it possibly could have been if I'd kept talking about technology news. But this, I've never really cared about the size of the audience. It's really about getting the right audience, people who really want to engage in conversation with me about these things. And it's the same with Modem. Anyway, I've had some requests from people in Perth and in Sydney to do Modem-style events in their city. So one of the things that I'm working on at the moment is to do a few more Modem events around the country in 2008 and hopefully get the digital media community around Australia together, maybe even at a national event we might end up running if we can get, you know, the right sort of sponsorship and the right levels of interest. But to talk again about, coming back to my new focus for G'day World and also for TPN this year, what can we as a community of people do to make the world a better place? And maybe the limit to my ability is to do this show and, you know, talk to a few thousand people about my thoughts on this issue, or maybe one of them will start to think of it as a result and that'll have an impact. Maybe that's the level of impact that I can have. But I'm sure that between us, we got so many smart, connected, experienced people in the geek community or in the listening community that we could have a major impact if we took the stuff that we know and understand about technology and actually applied it with a focus beyond getting our rocks off at how cool shit is. You know, there should be something more to it than that, I feel. I feel like we should be using these gifts again that we've been given to really make a difference. So Modem is going to be part of that for me in 2008 as well. It's part of the strategy, is getting together in real time. So we might talk about this stuff on blogs and podcasts and Twitter and Second Life and Facebook, what I call, you know, the meta conversation that is emerging out of the interaction and combination of all of these different communication platforms. But getting together in real life is also one of those. And so I'm going to be working on how we make that happen in the new year. And for those of you not in Melbourne, I hope I'll get to see you on a more regular basis. And for those of you in other countries, you know, I'd love to come over and spend some time with you as well. I mean, there's plenty of geek events happening in the US and the UK. But what about an event where we not only talk about the technology, but we talk about how we can use the technology to make a difference? That, I think, is one of the things that's kind of missing for me in a lot of these get-togethers. I always come out of these events, Perth was like this, but Modem is as well, feeling slightly hollow. Like, we had all of these great people there, but we didn't really do anything apart from pat each other on the back and compare notes on the latest mobile phone. I feel like we have the potential to do so much more. And so I'm just starting that conversation, and we'll see where it leads. Oh, well, that's enough from me. Thank you to everybody who has supported G'day World in the last 3 years, for the last 300 episodes. It really is a privilege for me to be able to do this. I don't take it lightly. I know I tease a bit, like the CEO Club poster did the other day, the fact that I haven't had a job for 3 years and I can waltz about with my mates like Richard and have a few beers in the middle of the day on a Monday when you're all working. But I really do appreciate the support and the opportunities that podcasting has given me over the last 3 years. I haven't had a real job now for 3 years, and I get to do what I want. I get to be on an adventure that I'm genuinely passionate about, and I get to do it on my own terms with people that I like, doing stuff that I care about. And you can't ask for much more than that in life, I think. To me, it's not about the money. It's not about the size of the audience. It's not about having a big swinging dick. Thank God. It's about being able to do what I want with the people that I want, when I want, how I want, and to feel like I'm actually doing something worthwhile and meaningful. It gets me up in the morning. It's feeling like there's a purpose that is worth my oxygen and Weet-Bix, that I'm contributing something back to society and back to the planet. And finally, I'd just like to thank everybody that's ever listened to the show or argued with me, agreed with me, helped me learn. I got accused again by a lady at Modem last night of being a fundamentalist and closed-minded and basically arrogant. And I'm really not. I really don't believe that is true. There are some things that I am fundamental about, and they are simply that truth is better than falsehood, that rationality is better than irrationality. And that's pretty much it. I mean, I change my mind on things all the time. I learn from great people, smarter people than me, more experienced all the time. Yeah, if you're going to come and have a conversation with me, you got to come armed with some facts, or at least with a brain that is willing to engage. Nick Hodge, I loved it. What he described after our last podcast, he described as having a conversation with me like fighting with an intellectual tornado or something. And it's, I'm not sure that's a compliment, but I like a good rigorous conversation. And I'm very fortunate that there are a lot of people that I've met through this podcasting stuff that I'm able to do that with. Duncan Riley and I disagree on many, many things when it comes to politics, but I love sitting down and chatting with Duncan because he can have a very vigorous discussion. And I don't think either of us are ideological. I think we both have a set of data that we bring to the table, and at the end of the day, we're both interested in understanding the truth about the situation. And that's how I perceive myself anyway. So I am fundamental about those core things, the search for truth, the search for rationality. But really, if you've got proof, if you want to come and debate me pretty much on anything, I'm up for it. I'm up to be shown the error of my ways, but come armed. So with that, I'm going to throw to James Messini. Apologize again for the background noise, but I hope you can persist with it because he's a terrific guy, got a good story, he's doing some really interesting stuff. And I'll be back at some stage soon with episode 301, the first episode of the fourth season of G'day World, where I hope you'll come along on the journey with me to try and figure out what we can be doing to make a difference. It's Cameron out. With that, let me introduce our guest speaker for tonight, James Rossetti from Hippo. Simon and I get to have a chat, and I met James via Simon a couple of months ago. Hippo is a sort of a job board in Australia. I think James first described it to me as seek.com for 15 to 24-year-olds who have particular needs that are different from your average job seeker. Sometimes it's their first job, they're still in school or straight in uni. But the interesting thing about James, in chatting to him the first time we got together for a coffee, he's obviously a lot younger than he looks. He's
only 24, he looks 45. Same problem as me, you know, I'm only 25 and people often mistake me for somebody a lot older. But has done a fabulous job, not only in starting up this business, but in getting funding, getting investors for it. Has a really interesting vision around this community as well. So why don't you take a seat, mate? Simon, you're going to take a seat and chat?
Sure.
You sit there, I'll see you.
We met James 6 months ago, I think. One of my old schoolmates was Nat Rockman, who was one of the founders of SEEK. So I got to sort of see firsthand how SEEK had grown up. And when I saw James, and when I met James, I was incredibly impressed with his vision. And then if you look at the team that he has assembled, and David Gillespie is just over there, and David heads up...
Nobody can steal him.
No, that's all right. He heads up the web team, but I've been remarkably impressed. If there was a client you would or could clone, it would be Hippo. They have certainly pushed us as their part of their online team, and certainly Ariba are in the room, so... Where's Alex and...
you need some good web developers.
Yep.
Colin.
Colin's there. And so I think that as a part of a... As we feel as a part of a collaborative team on helping build Hippo and supporting their vision, I think it's been a terrific journey. And it's really been James's vision of the technology that's made us a better company, because we've had to push ourselves to find the answers for him. And although I've had to pay for it... So I think it's a remarkable story, and I know they're going to succeed. Like all startups, there are bumps in the road, and James is, and David are mature beyond their years. And I thought he's got to meet the boss here and have a chat. And I thought it would be good to have a chat to the Modem community. So James, why don't you talk us and tell us about the story of Hippo?
Hippo is basically, as Cameron said, is a SEEK, my career one, but we purely target the 15 to 24 year old segment in Australia. And predominantly part-time casual employment as well. How it sort of started out was, I've been involved in a couple of businesses, and as I was going through a uni degree with a couple of these guys over here in entrepreneurship business management at RMIT, we had to come up with a new business concept. And basically, in doing that, I started looking at what was happening around the community and what was happening with my friends and all that sort of stuff, and found that, you know, a lot of my friends I was about 20 years of age at the time, were sort of, you know, having trouble and continually asking me how to get a job and what to do and sort of where to go to get a job and how to get a full job as well, which sort of started out. And when I started exploring it a bit more, I found that it was extremely difficult for these people to do it, 15 to 24-year-olds in Australia. In the way that they sort of went about it, you know, it started off that they'd sit there and try to write a resume, you know, because that's the first thing that you try to do when you go and get a job. But when you look at the conventional elements of a resume, they're sort of built around the constraints of education and experience, which when you look at the 15 to 24-year-old segment, they don't have any, or very limited knowledge in that place. So I started sort of doing a bit more research on it and thought, that's an interesting start to it. Then looked at the way in which they went out and actually got a job and went, okay, they walk into a store with their resume once they've created it, and they're going in trying to talk to a shopkeeper at a store level when the shop's extremely busy and all this sort of stuff, and they're finding it extremely daunting. You know, when they get there, to hand across a resume, it's an extremely daunting task. So we sort of went, okay, well, there's the second thing that they're finding bloody irritating. So we sort of went to the next stage and thought, okay, what's the next process that you go through? And the next stage was to jump onto SEEK, My Career One. And we sort of found that when this audience was getting onto those websites, that they were really being confronted by people with absolutely irrelevant job advertisements that didn't combat what they were looking for and what they were trying to seek. shouldn't say that word, too loud, but what they were trying to see for employment. So sort of they went, okay, this is an absolute mess. Like, my friends are telling me this, I've never looked at it and taken that much notice of it because I always have my own businesses, and then thought, shit, hang on, this is an actual mess. Thought, okay, but these guys need money. They need money to get out there and do what we're doing now and pay you $25 to sponsor a kid and help them out and all that side of it, or even to get here and eat this wonderful food, or to go out and get kids, or go overseas, or buy your first car, or do whatever it is. You know, this is what my friends were looking for, and there was no place that they could do it. So I thought, shit, okay, this is very interesting. So I went to the other side and started talking to employers. And with the employer market, I found that it was a very similar thing. You know, employers were hiring people within the 15 to 24 year old segment because, for starters, we can't say it, but they're cheap labor. And secondly, because, not because of their education or experience, because they don't have any. It was more for the cultural fit within an organization. And it was the fact that these people would do the job and fit into what the company was about and the style that they were trying to deliver. You know, these were the people who work in a bike shop and sit there and build a bike on, you know, during the day or on the weekend or whatever it is. You know, these are the people who, you know, the second that they're not at work, they're riding to work, or they're riding back home, or they're throwing themselves down a hill, or adventure racing, or whatever the hell it might be. You know, these are the types of people that a bike shop wants to do. And you looked at it with the other different businesses, and it was all that same sort of style. So I thought, there's a big gap here. Then I took it to the next sort of level, and we started looking at the technology itself. And with the actual technology itself, it was sort of, you looked at Seek My Career, Career One, and the style in which they were delivering it, and the style in which you would have to hand a resume across, and thought, well, hang on a second, it's all still built around this element of a resume, or it's built around the elements of getting across your education or experience. So we thought, shit, well, this isn't what they want, so let's chuck it all in the bin and start again. So together with the guys in at Ariba, we started developing a system that basically starts to, you know, profile individuals, and you can get on there and you're creating a resume for yourself through creating this profile. It talks about, you know, what your personality types are or what, you know, these things are that the employers want. We also introduced a couple of other features like video resumes, first in the market for video resumes in Australia. And there's a heap of different things that you can basically do on the actual site. From the employer side, we also looked at filtering systems so that they can really find people in an easier fashion. Then the business basically got started. We went out and raised capital. We got the founders of Boost Juice, Jeff and Janine Ellis, involved in the business. We got Mark Beeson, who owns High Point Shopping Centre, Suzanne Wood, Sports Girl, a whole host of things like that. And basically started developing this.
James, how hard was that? I mean, you're 23, right?
Yep.
When you went to raise capital. So you've raised...
The amount of money he's raised has been deleted.
Today?
A bit of money.
Was I not supposed to say that?
Oh, probably not.
Right. Okay. it's all right.
None of you heard it, and you're not broadcasting.
So you've raised, you know, a significant amount of money as a 23-year-old. So, you know, it takes big balls to go and speak to the Ellis's and the Mark Beeson's of the world. I mean, how did you do that?
First of all, developed a business plan. Through the entrepreneurship degree at RMIT, we basically have to develop a business plan and have to get involved in the business and look at all that side of it. We have a number of mentors that help us through that stage. And I've got a number of personal mentors myself who sort of help me through that stage as well. But it's going out and doing a heap of research on the actual market itself, putting it into a concept, and then obviously taking it out there, producing a presentation that you basically deliver to these 50-year-old guys who most of the time have absolutely no idea about technology, sorry. But, these guys, a lot of the time don't understand it, and you've got to deliver a message to them that incorporates what they do understand with what you're actually trying to do. So it's that visionary element that really has to come across with it. When I approached them, you know, it wasn't an easy task. We went out to was it? We went out to about 30 odd potential investors, venture capitalists at that stage. This was sort of July last year. Went out to these guys and basically started to push the plan around, push all this around. And every time it was just kickback after kickback after kickback. You know, it was shooting me down for, you know, you're too young, you're too inexperienced, you got no freaking idea, piss off, great idea, but you know, get over yourself. You get to the stage where it's like, then you keep moving forward and it's like, hey, you know, you're not asking for enough money. And you go, what the hell are you talking about? I'm not asking for enough money. Then you get to the stage of you're asking for too much money, and you're going, well, I've got this guy telling me it's not enough, I've got this guy telling me it's too much, what the hell am I doing here? But you keep forging forward with it. I kept getting it out there. I think then I started going into, well, this is an issue. You know, the venture capital market in Australia is extremely difficult to get involved in. You know, I got my foot in the door with these guys, but to keep them interested in the project and keep them interested in it, for us it was also, you know, the market is so large and there is so many job advertisements out there. Like last year alone, there were 10.7 million job advertisements placed in the online industry. Now, that is all controlled by three main players. You know, Seek, MyCareer, CareerOne. It is a huge industry. We just, these guys who just have so much money out there that they're just going to kill you. So basically, I then went, right, this isn't going to work in this way. Let's look at a new way of doing it. Let's find another way around it. So I went out to, started going to private individuals, high net worth individuals, and attacking them. We then found a couple of people and basically approached them, did a presentation to them, looked at people who would be interested in the space because of the employment industry, looked at people because of the advertising industry that we were in. You know, we are a form of advertising. And then basically by the end of it, in sort of October last year, about 12 months ago now, I had three people sitting there, which was Jeff and Janelle from Boost Juice. I had Nick Fraser, who's the guy who founded Media Puzzle, and had Eric Beecher, who's, you know, private media group, bloody crikey, and media mogul, anything else you can bloody think of. This guy's involved in it because it's got something to do with news. So had these guys there, and they all together put together a proposal to me about, you know, how much money they wanted to give me and how they wanted to structure it and what they wanted to do. What I did though is chose Jeff and Janine Ellis, not for their, the money that they were offering wasn't as much as these other guys were offering, but what they did offer was a personal relationship which I felt comfortable with, and a mentoring style that I felt would benefit the business itself.
And they're also employers of your target demographic.
Absolutely, which also helps. You know, to have our first advertisers on the site through the investors also definitely helps. And also, yeah, that kicked us along a fair bit during the start.
So in terms of the last 12 months, what would you say the top three things that you've learnt are, James, and go through this process?
Top three things that I've learnt, they would be to... There was an investor who was involved in the business at the beginning, who still is an investor in the business, who unfortunately, and there was a couple more that were involved in it, who unfortunately took advantage of me and my age and the concept and all that, sense of greed and potential earnings for themselves that almost destroyed me personally in the business. And I think the biggest learning from that is to sort of watch yourself and watch your back and be able to protect what you've got and the IP that you have from people like that. It's very hard to pick them, but to structure the deal in a way that it protects itself is the real key to that. And finding a good lawyer or good mentor to work yourself through is a real key. Dealing with people, you know, which comes with what I just said anyway, is probably the biggest lesson. You know, staff, we've had a high turnover of staff, but you know, some of them have been fantastic. Some of them have absolutely shifted you up the wall. And I don't think it matters whether it's, you know, 15 staff or whether it's 3 staff, it's going to be the same thing. You've got to be prepared to turn those staff over and get that during that initial stages, at least, before you get on the trip. Probably the third lesson I've learned is really about getting involved with good people. It's getting the energy from good people. People like Simon, people like Ariba, you know, Colin and Alex down there. They're good developers, they're good people. They want to help you grow, and they want to get involved in what your business is about and help you get that through and get that forward. And I think that's really the key lesson to it.
Last question, mate. What are you doing to make the world a better place?
What am I doing to make the world a better place? I am finding employment for 15 to 24-year-olds who can't get out there.
Yeah! Got anything else? You go out and speak to a lot of groups and keys, don't you?
I do. This week I went and spoke to a bunch of Swinburne design students, digital design students, who are putting together business plans with a lecturer who has limited knowledge in that space, which is not unusual for a lecturer. I like to go out. I love to help people. Anything at all that I can provide, an assistance or anything like that, I'm definitely there to give anyone a hand. So, yeah, I'm not going to steal anyone's ideas. I just want to help you.
The business is on a bit of a roll now. The momentum is going. I've been very...
brilliant?
No.
Yep.
I've been refreshed that, you know, they've got a very good sales culture in terms of spinning the revenue very quickly. And so talk about what you think the exit is for Hippo. I mean, are you going to hang in there long enough till Seek come along and say, look, you've annoyed us long enough, we'll just take it? I mean, because I've known you for a while now, and clearly money is not the driver of your motivation.
The motivation behind this business is really about that 15 to 24-year-old segment. I want to guarantee that I give my shareholders a damn good return on their investment. For me, it's not personally about the money itself. It's about growing myself and growing the business and being able to help these people, which is where it comes down to what you were saying before. It's a difficult thing. We are growing exceptionally fast. We have Telstra as clients, Woolworths, Coles Group, Meyer, David Jones, Hungry Jack's, Boost Juice, obviously. Basically, every big or Spotless Catering, every big retail and hospitality player in the segment is using us, or we're in discussions about finding a way to get them and you know, get them using us.
How many people like Coles hire over Christmas?
Well, Coles Group, for example, will hire between August and December. We'll hire basically about 30,000 people throughout Australia, with about 90% of them in the 15 to 24-year-olds. So there's 2.8 million people in Australia aged 15 to 24. There's 1.8 million of them employed. There's 600,000 of them actively seeking employment over and above that. Yeah, it is a huge market.
So
it is a huge
possibility. When you help the modem folks out, when you give us like 4 weeks of notice before the IPO, so are you guys, you know, friends and family type deal, or?
I don't know.
Let's just help a Reaper out and go before it goes.
All right, come on, come on. Round of applause for James.
Any questions?
Is the story of the site the story of the individual, in that you're selling people with no experience,
yep,
with only potential talent and perhaps a bright outlook on life? Has that been the story of site development as well?
Yeah, I suppose. Because you could
say... question for Mark, then.
Is the story of the site that I've just portrayed the story of myself and the other way around as well? You know, is the story of myself the story of the site?
And the follow-up to that is, if...
Yeah.
Now that you're successful, are you going to lose that contact with the punters on your side?
I don't believe that we're successful.
Yeah, get a haircut in this suit, son. Is that the exit strategy, when you don't identify with the people you're actually getting work for?
No. I'm not that sort of person. For me, everything is absolutely genuine. It's about For me, it's the energy of the business that's driving it forward. It's the technology that we can use to make this easier. The whole point of what I was saying before with abolishing the systems that were presently being used or that were traditionally being used in the market until we entered was a way of really re-stemming that technology. Where we move into in the future, you'll see a shitload of really radically different technology being introduced into the job market, and not only the job market, into helping out the 15 to 24 year old audience with basically getting ahead and not being disadvantaged as they are at the moment.
Do you think there'll be a recruitment agency business in 10 years?
For us?
For anyone?
Look, recruitment agencies are an interesting thing. We have Dale here who's anyone needs a good IT recruitment person, expand, damn good. But look,
I mean, are those radical technologies? Are those radical technologies that can't be don't deliver perfectly?
No, they
don't deliver perfectly.
They work in a very different market. What I looked at was with the recruitment industry itself, they focus predominantly on more professional executive type roles. When you look at it, the reason why they do that is their commission structure. It's based around percentage of a person's wage. When you look at our market itself, or you look at something like Seek, Seek is used by a recruiter, or my career one, by a recruiter to attract the audience for them to fill a role. The whole point of a recruiter is that the company itself doesn't have the time or resources to go out there, or knowledge to go out there and hire the individual themselves to fit that role in the best way. It's very different from that of a job website or an employment.
But neither do recruiters. I mean, there's a fair argument that a lot of companies here make that recruiters are not much better than the companies themselves.
Yeah.
They're not actually supplying that gap at all.
Yeah.
And you're talking about radical technologies. Yeah. Is that the gap?
Difficult to judge. How do you gain a greater insight into an individual is the question. To present that to a company in the way that they want to have it, and understand it. That's where...
So you're talking about software filtering versus human filtering.
Yeah.
Right?
There's a difference between an emotional level and an emotional connection with an individual, which you receive through... Which potentially a recruiter can receive through their initial screening process, that potentially a manager of a business or an employee of a business who doesn't have that experience or expertise is not able to understand from that initial interview.
So, James, would you regard yourself as the Facebook recruitment agency?
Interesting analogy. Facebook is... Yes, we are in a way a Facebook style in that it's profiling and that side of it, but we will go into it in a hell of a lot more detail than Facebook, looking at what it is that an employer itself can make their life easier and understand culturally what that individual is about to fit into their organisation, what they're about and trying to do. So it is different.
Any other questions, Tony?
Yeah. 20 years ago, we joined companies to get more technology. Yeah?
Yes.
So we joined to get our fax machines, our word processors,
yes,
things like that. Nowadays, the 15 to 24-year-olds have more advanced technology,
yes,
than the companies they're joining. So
yep,
they turn up at Telstra or NAB.
Yeah.
They're asked to switch off them.
Yes.
So what are they making of being asked to do that? And how are the companies reacting to people who... normally use Twitter,
yeah,
SMS, Facebook. What's happening with that clash?
I think the easiest way of looking at that is how many of the companies that we work for have turned off Facebook so you can't access it, or Hotmail or whatever it is. Most of us will say that the bloody idiots in IT have turned that thing off and don't let me access it because of whatever bloody reason it is, and not accept that and get angry with it and all that side of it. I think that, we're always going to have that argument. There's always going to be an argument between a company and its employee as to what they should be doing and how they're doing it and the way in which they do it. From an employer's level, it is extremely frustrating to see somebody sitting there on their mobile phone or Twitter or something like that, because you're going, it's my company who's being jeopardized by this, and it doesn't fall down to you sitting there. You know, if you don't make any money today, I've still got to pay you. You know, whereby, if you don't make any money today, I don't have any freaking money to pay you. So you've got to look at it from a perspective of, yeah, that's cool. When they're in the workplace...
So these employees ban newspapers and magazines from the workplace as well?
Do you sit there reading a newspaper whilst you're meant to be writing a email?
Well, if you do, what happens to you?
You just get mad.
Well, I think...
Yeah.
And so do you think these people sit there and read Facebook and Twitter where they should be working?
Yeah.
Really?
They do, all the time. What is it? $2 million worth, $2 billion worth lost in last financial year, whatever the hell they wanted to turn around and stay with it. It's...
I saw that study as well.
Yeah,
I,
it's a lot of shit.
I think they surveyed five people in the middle of the streets and they had a survey there.
Absolutely.
So will this age group put up with, will they compromise the technology to go into the large corporate?
I think that it's interesting actually, because one of the things that David, one of the guys who works with me, has found last week, you know, we're sitting there and came in the morning and said, this is awesome. Facebook now has an app on the BlackBerry. Yeah, and we went, oh, this is cool. Yeah, now I can be sitting on the train and do that. It doesn't work properly yet, but that's a different story. I think that as the age group grows and as the technology itself continues to grow, I think that people who understand the technology and the use for it and the community that evolves around it grows and expands and become the bosses of the future, then I think we're going to see a very different world in that style. For the moment, though, I think that for the next X amount of years, you're going to see your Merrill Lynch's cutting off Facebook. You're going to see all this side of it, and they're not going to stop it until we, as a community, could turn around and give them the understanding and the foresight that it's not a negative thing. That, yeah, cool, they're using it for their social interaction. And yes, there's probably a number of them that are using it over and above the amount that they should be on a daily basis whilst they're working. But most of us understand the level of when we are at work and when we're at home, or when we are at work and using Facebook versus when we're sitting at home and using Facebook. And I think that's the key, is really the education of these older people, you know, who don't understand the technology. Yeah, like Simon, as I said before.
Yeah. Alright, we've got more questions. I mean, I know that James is going to be sticking around. Don't want to hold people back from socialising and mingling. So,
and eat the food, please eat the food.
Yeah, please eat the food, or else Simon's going to take it over and eat it all. It's fighting, you know, like we knew us old blokes. Thanks, James, for us again. And,